SmackDown was back in Canada tonight. They have had quite a few shows over the last few weeks up in Canada. We were in Edmonton the other night for Raw. Tonight, SmackDown was in Winnipeg. And there were some talents missing. I thought that might be the case because of everything going on with Hurricane Ian. And again, I said this the other night. Anybody who has been impacted by it, I know we have a lot of people down south, a lot of people who live in Florida, who watch these streams and listen to the podcast. I hope everybody is okay. You know, you see the reports on television, and it really doesn't do justice to the damage and the devastation down there. They said it's the worst hurricane to hit Florida, probably of all time. And they're still sifting through all the damage and trying to find people. So it's a very scary thing. And so I expected, you know, especially with a lot of wrestlers who are based down in Florida, a lot of them live down there. The Performance Center is down there in Orlando. Apparently the Performance Center is still shut down, but somehow it didn't sustain much in the way of damage, which is good. But Bayley was there tonight. Dakota Kai was not. Io Sky was not. Sheamus was there tonight, but he came out and said that his boys, the Brawling Brutes, Ridge Holland, Butch, they were not there. I'm sure there were a few other people who were not there as well. But what we did have on the show tonight was the Monday Night Raw roster. We had Kevin Owens on the show. We had Johnny Gargano on the show. We had the Raw Women's Champion, Bianca Belair, make an appearance. We had the Alpha Academy, but the Alpha Academy's been appearing on Raw, appearing on SmackDown now for weeks, as has Austin Theory. He was on the show tonight as well, so I was going to make a joke about the brand split, but again, with the whole hurricane thing, I don't think it's really a joking situation. We also had another clue tonight in the White Rabbit mystery. Everybody was wondering if we were going to get a new clue tonight in the whole White Rabbit saga, and we did. It was very quick. It was another QR code at the end of one of the segments on the show, and it has led people back down the rabbit hole. I will talk about what this clue brought to us tonight. More information on that. But there is some sad breaking news to report. You saw it there at the beginning of the stream in the graphic. Antonio Inoki has passed away at the age of 79. He was the founder, the founding father of New Japan Pro Wrestling. And in this, the 50th anniversary of New Japan Pro Wrestling, it was earlier this year, Okada, after his match at one of the shows, was very clear in hoping that Inoki would be healthy enough to make an appearance at their 50th anniversary show earlier this year, and hoping that he would be able to physically, you know, be there if at all possible, and his health just would not allow it. He has been in poor health for some time, so Inoki was unfortunately not there, but this is a man who was a godlike figure in Japanese culture, Japanese pro wrestling for so many years. And to just call him a pro wrestler is almost not doing him justice, because he was such a big figure even beyond the pro wrestling world. He got into the world of politics, and of course there were all kinds of reports about, you know, all kinds of things, you know, good and bad, that he was involved in. But I mean, to tell his full story would take far too long. And there'll be time for me to talk about that on the episode I'm doing on Sunday, episode 776 of the podcast. But the news of his passing broke on Yahoo after SmackDown had already gone on the air tonight. News started to spread on social media that he had passed away, and it looked legitimate. And in the second hour of the show, about 20 past the hour, they broke in on SmackDown live. So they broke into the format, whatever they had planned tonight. You know, because every segment on these shows is mapped out to the second in terms of what they say, in terms of how much time they have for an announcer stand-up, for a match, for a backstage segment. So they broke into the show in the second hour. They cut to the announcers at ringside. It was Michael Cole. It was Corey Graves. And Michael Cole broke the news to the audience about Inoki passing away. Corey Graves called him the first Japanese WWE champion of all time. And acknowledged that it is not a reign that is officially acknowledged. But he also mentioned his legendary match many years ago with Muhammad Ali. again, this you can go hours and hours recapping all of the major events in this man's life and career. But this is something that you really don't ever see them doing. You don't ever see them breaking into the show like this for an announcement like that. If it is something that happens to come out during the show, you would expect that if it was a big enough name, the following show or the following week on TV, they'd have the graphic, they'd have a little video package. So it was unique for them to do that. It was actually, I think, it was very nice, frankly, to see them break into the show like that, to acknowledge his passing. They had a graphic that they mocked up real quick, as we did here tonight. Shout out to Steve for the graphic at the top of the show. But that puts it into perspective just how big of a name he really was. I'm sure a lot of fans watching the show tonight, if you're a casual fan, you might not know who he is, but certainly in the wrestling world and even in WWE history, not even just in Japanese history, in WWE history, he is a pretty major figure. So again, rest in peace to Antonio Inoki, who passed away earlier today at the age of 79. This is your SmackDown review for Friday, September 30th, 2022. I am the Solo Monster. Super chats are open, so if you would like to send one on in, go ahead and do so, and I will be reading your messages a little bit later on. And if we can, tonight we'll make the goal 500. That's the goal tonight for Be the Booker. 500 likes on this live stream. If we can get there, then we will do Be the Booker a little bit later. SmackDown open, let's just get right into the show here. SmackDown open with Sami Zayn coming out to a great reaction. Of course, he was back in his native land. He was back in Canada tonight. Not exactly Montreal a few weeks ago, which is his hometown or his home province, I guess you would say. But nonetheless, he came out, got a huge reaction from the crowd. They were happy to see him. They chanted his name. He was there with Solo Sikoa. They were out there tonight representing the bloodline. No Paul Heyman, no Roman Reigns on this show. No Jimmy Uso. We had Jey Uso in a backstage segment very briefly, but Sammy and Solo were the ones representing the bloodline tonight. Solo Sikoa, by the way, who has new entrance music that does not sound as bad as Braun Strowman's new entrance music. They were here to take on Madcap Moss and Ricochet, who also has new music. The heels got more cheers than the baby faces whenever they went on offense. So the whole heel baby face alignment was out of whack here. Sikoa worked over Ricochet coming out of the first commercial break, hit a Samoan drop for a near fall. Can't have a match with a Samoan in it unless they hit a Samoan drop. Ricochet then hit a drop kick from the second rope and tried to crawl over for the tag. Madcap came in, Sammy came in. And Moss landed some shoulder blocks and a fallaway slam. Solo tried to get involved, but Moss dumped him to the floor. And Sikoa went to go grab a steel chair. And Ricochet stopped him from using it. Sammy got a near fall on Moss with a blue thunder bomb, which I will always pop for the blue thunder bomb. He got 2.999 before he kicked out. Climbed up top, but Moss caught Sammy coming off and rolled through, and he hit a jackhammer, covered him for the pin. Solo barely got there to break it up in time. I mean, the referee had to hold that count up a little bit, but he got there. He broke it up. Ricochet tried to dive at Sikoa on the floor, but as he came through the rope, Solo just threw a chair right at his head. And then he tossed Ricochet over the barricade, over by Samantha Irvin, and Ricochet landed right on his fucking head. Right in front of her, he landed right on his head. He murdered this man right in front of his girlfriend. Now, that's cold. All of a sudden, the lights went out. And actually, I don't think they went out completely. It was more like they mostly dimmed. But the lights in the arena went out for maybe 2 or 3 seconds, and then they came back on, and it was never acknowledged. The announcers didn't make any mention of it. It didn't happen again for the rest of the show. The White Rabbit is coming. Oh, we're going to talk about the White Rabbit. The White Rabbit is coming. Sikoa made a blind tag to Sami Zayn and hit a spinning heel kick on Madcap Moss when he came in. And he followed that up with the Uranage that he is calling the Spinning Sikoa for the win. After the match was over, Sami tried to calm down Sikoa. He kept doing the corner hip attack on Madcap in the corner. Sami was able to calm him down, raised his hand. and it's a win for the Bloodline. So we'll see. You know, when they get outside of Canada, I don't remember offhand where Raw is going to be on Monday. I think they're done with Canada for now. Now it's AEW's turn. AEW is going to be making their Canadian debut in a couple of weeks. They're going to be in Toronto. But it'll be interesting when they get out of Canada and into other cities on TV, what kind of reactions Sammy and Solo get. Solo Sikoa's been getting pretty positive reactions, too. It's not just Sami Zayn. People like Solo. They liked him in NXT, and they seem to like him on the main roster. We'll see what kind of reactions they get outside of Canada. But the transition to the main roster so far has been very smooth for Solo Sikoa. And look, it helps that this guy just got called up to the main roster from developmental, and he's in the top heel faction in the company. He is surrounded by champions. He is surrounded by Roman Reigns, the top champion, the top star in the entire company, and his brothers, who are the undisputed tag team champions. The top faction in the top storyline going today in WWE. Not a bad spot for him to be, considering that he just made his main roster debut. But he's making the most of it. He doesn't look out of place. I think he's playing his role just fine. I was a big fan of his in NXT, and I still am now. So the story continues. In the back, Sammy and Solo are walking down the hallway. Sammy, of course, talking up Solo and how great that win was, how impressive he was. So they come to the Bloodline locker room, and Sammy goes to enter, and he realizes that the door is locked. And Jey Uso opens the door, and he walks out. And he tells Sammy that he was just there to make sure his little brother was doing good. And Sammy said, doing good? He's doing great. Did you see the end of that match? He killed it. And Jey let Solo into the room, and he told him, I'll be right there. And he closed the door behind him. And Jey had a little heart-to-heart with Sami Zayn in the hallway. And he got up in his fin. Now, we know how Jey Uso feels about Sami Zayn. He doesn't like him. He doesn't trust him. So he got up in Sammy's face, and he made it very clear to him that he sees right through him. He doesn't trust him. He sees right through this guy. And he told him if he ever thought about betraying or did anything to betray the group, that he would get to him first. And Sammy told him, he basically pointed at his honorary Oos t-shirt and says, well, maybe you should take that up with Roman. And then he went around Jey and went into the locker room to look for Solo Sikoa, and they zoomed in on Jey Uso's face, who was not very happy. So again, War Games is coming up, and if there was ever going to be a spot for a Sami Zayn betrayal, and when I say betrayal, I don't even mean that he intentionally cost them the match, but just he fucks up in some way, he makes a mistake that costs the Bloodline dearly. Jey Uso has put him on notice. This could be a foreshadowing of what's to come, possibly in War Games. Makes so much sense to use War Games as a turning point in this storyline. Has to happen. So Michael Cole, up next, introduced a video package for Karrion Kross. This was very well done. In the promo, he said, well, first of all, Scarlett was shown walking down a staircase to an alleyway, what looked like an alleyway. And here comes Karrion Kross, who walks, you know, down the alley into camera view. And he's cutting a promo on Drew McIntyre, calls him, you know, a guy that he had to send to the hospital just to keep him down. But thankfully, sending people to the hospital was his specialty. And he said that they would be bound through suffering at Extreme Rules. And once everybody sees what the cards have shown him, and I assume that's a reference to the tarot cards that we see Scarlett holding up sometimes, I guess now he can predict the future. Once everybody sees what the cards have shown him, he will become the next undisputed WWE Universal Champion. He told McIntyre when he was done with him that he would leave him there to burn forever. So this was good stuff. Again, they shot this in an alley somewhere. This was a little bit different than your standard WWE promo. And really, everything about the presentation so far of Kross and Scarlett has been spot on. I can't say anything bad about the way they've presented these two and the way they've done their promos and the way they film them. It makes them feel special because it is different, because there are few, if anybody else in the company that I can think of, who get these types of segments shot in this way. So they found a way to distinguish him from everybody else, which is good, because it makes him feel special. But the real test for him is going to be at Extreme Rules, because that's his first real test on the main roster. We've seen him have big matches before, a long time ago in NXT. What he did in NXT doesn't matter. Whatever matches he had there with Samoa Joe and Finn Balor and people like that, Adam Cole, none of that matters. It's so far in the past. That was a different version of him. That was a different time. It was a different world. Things are different now. This is a new Karrion Kross. He's starting from scratch. And this is going to be his first big match on the main roster. That strap match next Sunday, or next Saturday, rather, against Drew McIntyre. I'm still trying to get used to the fact that these fucking pay-per-views are on Saturdays. But he's going to have that strap match with Drew McIntyre. He really needs to go in there and have a good show. And Drew is a good person for him to be in the ring with. Drew McIntyre is very good. Drew McIntyre this year alone has had kick-ass matches with Sheamus and with Roman Reigns, among others. I mean, he was in that feud with Corbin for a while, but we'll forget about that. Corbin and Mad Cat, that's going to be a real test for Karrion Kross. But the bigger story that people cared about came at the end of the promo. Because at the end of the promo, they flashed a QR code on the screen. Here we go again with another one of these QR codes that lead us down the rabbit hole into another creepy video. So this was the latest clue in the White Rabbit mystery. It linked to a 15-second video that includes footage of the Three Little Pigs from the Disney cartoon. One of them is playing a flute. One of them is playing a violin. One of them, actually the one that was playing a flute at one point, flips off the camera. So I don't remember that being in the Disney cartoon. Maybe that was an outtake. That's one of those outtakes that Disney doesn't want you to know about. So then they show the Big Bad Wolf, the cartoon version of the Big Bad Wolf. And then there is a creepy image that flashes, and it's very quick. And they flash it three times, but it's very fast. And the image that they show, it's of a different wolf. So they go from the cartoon wolf, and then this image they flash three times is of this wolf. This is a much cooler and creepier version of the Big Bad Wolf. And there you see in the back what appears to be Little Red Riding Hood. Now, I think there was a movie called Red Riding Hood. I didn't see it, so I don't know if the wolf was in it. I don't know if this is basically a screenshot from the movie. I don't know what this is from, to be honest with you. But there's Little Red Riding Hood. But here we are again, to go back to the pigs. Another character represented from the Firefly Funhouse, right? Rambling. We've been talking about the White Rabbit now for weeks and the Jefferson Airplane song. But we're talking about rabbits. So, of course, you think of Ramblin' Rabbit. Now we see pigs, which makes you think of what? Huskus the Pig, the second character represented from the Firefly Funhouse. The only one missing now is the Buzzard. And everybody was saying on Raw Monday night, very briefly in the back, you saw somebody in the background run by who looked like a buzzard. I think that people are seeing things that aren't there because I watched that back five times. I think I saw somebody with a headset on. People think they're seeing buzzards now. So I don't know if that was a buzzard or not, but we have at least two characters now represented in all of this from the Firefly Funhouse, which is not a coincidence. But there was also Morse code at the end of this video. And I don't know Morse code. I cannot decipher Morse code. I'm sure somebody else has already done it by now. But a couple of other things that I did not pick up on. This comes from Sean Ross Sapp on his Twitter. He said that if you zoom on the newest clue, there is a White Rabbit logo at the bottom of the website. The file name is TS_S10E6. S10E6, right? It's part of the file name. Apparently, the file name represents The Simpsons, hence the TS. Season 10, Episode 6. Now, what is the significance of The Simpsons Season 10, Episode 6? White Rabbit by Jefferson Airplane is in the episode. So that is the significance of the file name. In the file name of the White Rabbit image, there is a phone number. And that phone number is 855-489-5099. And I guess if you call the number, I'm going by what other people have said. I've not tried calling this number. But evidently, if you call this phone number, it plays a message backwards. And when you play it in reverse, it says, Bravo, Echo, Lima, Alpha, India, Romero, I am the way into the city of woe. I am the way into eternal sorrow. Those are the latest clues here from the White Rabbit mystery. But we weren't done. Later in the show, after the Hit Row match, which I'll talk about, even though I don't want to, after the match was over, Michael Cole and Corey Graves were shown sitting at ringside, and Michael Cole is talking about something or other. Behind Cole, some guy walks behind them in the front row with a sign. And they walk there with this sign that you see here on screen. As Cole, I don't know what Cole is doing in this image. It looks like he's trying to do the fucking backstroke, and Corey Graves is trying to say, like, stay away from me. But you see the sign there, revel in what you are. This guy just walked in, held the sign up, and that's what it said. Revel in what you are. So what is the significance of this? What does this mean? Revel in what you are. It took 2 minutes for someone online, because I don't know, people figure this out, 30 seconds, they have it figured out. In 30 seconds, somebody figured out the connection here to this. This is a tweet, and you can see the timestamp, you can see the date on the bottom of the tweet. This goes back almost 3 years to October of 2019. This was a tweet from Bray Wyatt. Rob Schamberger is WWE's resident artist. He's always putting together these great, you know, art images of all the wrestlers. They bring him into fan access and stuff. So he was giving a shout out here to Rob Schamberger, who did some Fiend artwork. It says, Bravo, Rob Schamberger. This is beautiful, but look at the message here in the tweet. Revel in what you are. So there you go. Again, it's all coming together. What this all means, I don't fucking know. But that's the point. They're throwing a lot of stuff at you, but there are threads here. There are threads that kind of pull all these different things together. Again, Corey Graves, Michael Cole never acknowledged the sign behind them, but there's the tweet right there from Bray from 3 years ago. You know, Extreme Rules is the perfect time to do the reveal because it's going to start to overstay its welcome. If they wait much longer, I mean, I find this, you know, kind of stuff fun and interesting. I don't think people are going to want to wait much longer, though, to get the payoff to this. So I think the timing is working out fine. We got the pay-per-view coming up in just over a week. And it would seem to me that that would be the perfect place to do the reveal and have Bray show up. And hopefully it is, because I think if they wait much longer, I know I floated the idea of Halloween a couple of weeks ago because Halloween falls on a Monday this year. I mean, that would be another month. I think to drag this out for another month would be a mistake. You've got to pay this off or give the people something. And I think Extreme Rules is the place to do that. So backstage, we had Kayla Braxton. And she was in the back to interview Mr. Money in the Bank, Austin Theory. She asked if he planned on cashing in soon. Which, I mean, I don't know why he would answer that. If I were him, I would say no comment. If I was going to cash it in soon, why would I tell you? That would be very stupid of me. So he mentioned Brock Lesnar. He was complaining about people ruining his moment. He said first it was Brock Lesnar and then it was Tyson Fury. He started talking about Drew McIntyre embarrassing himself in front of all of his fans and all of his family at Clash at the Castle. Called him an idiot for getting himself into a strap match with Karrion Kross. As he's insulting Drew appears in the background. Now, Theory has no idea that he's standing there. He keeps going on and on and on. So finally, Drew smacks him on the shoulder, puts his hand on Theory's shoulder, says, want to see him in the ring now. He goes down to the ring to presumably wrestle Austin Theory. Again, this is an impromptu match. So we come back. And it is indeed Drew McIntyre against Austin Theory. That is the match. But when Theory comes out, he pauses and he brings out the Alpha Academy. And here comes Chad Gable. Here comes Otis to be in his corner. So they started the match. A lot of chops early on. Didn't end too well for Theory. You're not going to get in a chop battle with somebody like Drew McIntyre. McIntyre tossed Theory across the ring. Gable provided the distraction, and Theory hung McIntyre up on the top rope. McIntyre came back and dropped him with a Future Shock DDT. Again, Gable tried to get involved. McIntyre dumped him into the ring. Otis, though, pulled Drew out to the floor and threw him into the ring steps for the disqualification. Right around 3 minutes after the match, it was 3-on-1, beat down on McIntyre. Johnny Gargano's music hits. I don't know why. I was expecting it to be Braun. Maybe, I guess Braun wasn't there. So Johnny Gargano's music hits, and here comes Johnny all the way from Monday Night Raw down to the ring to make the save. But again, he gets overwhelmed, and the numbers game is simply too much. So Kevin Owens' music plays, and now Kevin Owens runs down to the ring to join in on the fun. KO and Gargano clear Theory and Gable from the ring. McIntyre sends Otis to the floor with a headbutt. This was more of an angle than a match. It was 3 minutes. But what surprised me is that usually in these situations, we go to a commercial, we come back, and all of a sudden there's a six-man tag in progress. I guess the biggest surprise here was that they didn't immediately go into the six-man tag. They saved it for the end of the show. Otherwise, this was your standard setup in WWE to a six-man tag. But for tonight, it was the main event, probably because whatever they actually had planned for the main event, maybe they had something different planned, but because certain people couldn't travel in, I'm sure they had a rewrite at least part of the show. Backstage, Max Dupri was walking the hall in the back, looking more like LA Knight than the Maximum Male Model guy. When he ran into Maxine Dupri with Massey and Mansoir, they ran into the Maximum Male Mid-Carders, and they said that we were going to make it up to you tonight by winning a title. And Max got all excited. He said, you got a match with the Usos tonight? And they said, no. We're going to set the Canadian record for the longest pose. So then Max walked away all disgusted. And as they started doing their dumb pose, Hit Row walked by. They were laughing, and they did something or said something to distract them, and they broke their pose, so they had to start all over again. And Hit Row walked off for their match, which was Hit Row taking on Los Lotharios, Angel Garza, and Humberto Carrillo. We had Ashanti the Adonis reversing a vertical suplex and hitting a neckbreaker. Top Dollar hit a side slam and an elbow drop. Garza tried to flirt with B-Fab. I don't blame him, but probably not the time to be doing that. He was trying to flirt with her. That led to Angel and Humberto getting slammed by Top Dollar at the same time. Ashanti tagged in. They landed the heavy hitter, which is their finish, on Humberto, and they picked up the win. After the match, to me, that was the real story. After the match, Hit Row were celebrating, and nobody cared. Nobody in Winnipeg seemed to care about Hit Row. Top Dollar has been more like a couple of quarters since he came back. He's more like, well, I guess we already have a 50 cent. We'll call him 45 cents. That's about what he's been worth ever since he's come back. There is something missing here. They are cold as ice as an act right now. And it's not for lack of trying. They've been featuring them consistently on television. They've been doing backstage segments with them. They've been having Top Dollar do power spots. And in some cities, he gets a big reaction for it. So there are moments, there are like pockets where they'll get a reaction. But by and large, and tonight was one of those nights, the people just, they don't seem to care about these guys. And, you know, I know when people were complaining about Swerve Strickland no longer being with them, they hit back. Top Dollar went online and he, you know, reacted to that by saying, you know, Hit Row was our idea originally. Hit Row was a trio. Swerve, you know, they don't have any heat with him, but Swerve wasn't part of what we came up with. This was an idea that he and Ashanti and B-Fab came up with together. And originally they were supposed to be a trio. And it was WWE's idea. It was Triple H's idea. Or Triple H or Shawn Michaels or whoever it was to put Swerve with them and make them a foursome. And so they were more than happy now to kind of have the chance to go out there and be a trio and show people what they originally, you know, had intended to be. It is becoming painfully obvious by the week that they need Swerve in this group. And they don't have him. They're not going to have him. I could see why Triple H, I'm sure, told his minions to reach out to Swerve to see if he was free and wanted to come back to WWE, which is what pissed off Tony Khan so much about the contract tampering. Swerve was the first name that I said on the podcast when I first heard these rumors and stories about contract tampering was Swerve Strickland, that somebody was contacted and then potentially snitched and told Tony Khan. The first person I thought of was Swerve Strickland. And then we find out this past week that he was one of the names contacted by WWE. And I think he may have told them, talk to my lawyer or something. Or whatever he told them. I could see why Triple H would have wanted him back when he was putting Hit Row back together. Because even Triple H probably realized, you know, in order to really make this work and give this the best chance of success, Swerve should be part of this group. Now we start to see how pivotal a role he played in this group. Yes, maybe he was not originally part of what Hit Row was supposed to be, but it was smart on WWE's part to put him with them because Swerve is very good. Swerve has a certain charisma about him, and Swerve is by far of the three men that were in that group, the best performer in the ring, the one who could go out there and have the kick-ass match. It was him. It was not Ashanti. It was not Top Dollar. And I've seen what B-Fab can do in the ring, and it's better that she stays outside. It was all about Swerve. Swerve was the one who carried that group. And it's becoming very noticeable by the week that without him, they are less than. They are not what they were in NXT. I was a huge Hit Row fan for a while there in NXT. It felt fresh. I thought it was... Yeah, I thought it was a good pairing. Swerve, they put some people around him, and so now it made him feel like a bigger deal because for so long they weren't doing anything with him. I thought it was just the perfect idea for those guys. They called him up to SmackDown the first time. You can't even judge that because how many matches did Hit Row have on TV? One? Two? I don't even remember if Swerve was in those matches. Under Triple H, he would have known what to do with those guys. But the most important part of that group is no longer part of that group. And I think that's a big part of why this thing is dying on the vine so far. Yeah, I want to see them succeed. I want to see them do well. I want to see them kind of throw it back in people's faces. Oh, we got fired and, you know, Triple H gave us a second chance and now we want to make the most of it. But this just is not clicking. And I think not having Swerve in that group is a big part of why. And I think they're being exposed, and now we're seeing it. We had Ronda Rousey in action this week. She was going one-on-one against Natalya. Of course, Ronda Rousey is going to be challenging Liv Morgan for the SmackDown Women's Championship next weekend at Extreme Rules. This didn't last long. This went about 4 minutes. At no point during this match did anybody in the world believe that Natalya was going to beat Ronda Rousey, so of course there was no drama whatsoever here. Ronda went for Piper's Pit, Natty reversed into a sharpshooter attempt, and Ronda escaped. That was the second time in the match she escaped a sharpshooter attempt. Natty hit a discus clothesline. Ronda got an ankle lock with a grapevine, and Natty struggled and struggled and struggled, but she had no choice ultimately but to tap out. After the match, Liv Morgan walked out with a baseball bat. At first, when she walked out, because the baseball bat was black and it had some kind of design. It was like the baseball bat had a tattoo of its own. But from afar, it looked like it was wrapped in barbed wire when I first looked at it. I said, oh, okay, now they've taken this extreme rule stipulation seriously. She's going Negan here on Ronda Rousey. But then we got closer and I could tell, okay, this is not barbed wire. So she's walking down to the ring and they end up having a stare down. Ronda confronts her in the aisle, and Ronda hits a kick. Morgan, though, ends up giving her a bat shot to the gut. Ronda hit Piper's Pit on the floor, and they ended up having a tug of war over the bat. Somehow the bat went flying, and I thought it was going to land on the floor, and it ended up popping up and landing in the ring. Liv went to take a swing, though, when she ended up getting the bat back. Ronda tossed her into the barricade instead. security was pleading with Rhonda, please stop. They were trying to get Rhonda to stop her assault, and she tossed the bat aside, and she started to walk away. Liv, though, gave chase. She broke free, gave chase. She tackled Rhonda to the ground. Both women had to be separated, and so that was the end of that segment. Look, they're trying. They're trying. I mean, my believability only goes so far when it comes to this. Ronda Rousey and Liv Morgan. You can't say they haven't been trying to give Liv Morgan some kind of an edge. Last week, we saw what they did with her with the big spot off the top through a table to Lacey Evans, right? Showing that she's willing to take risks and go extreme heading into the pay-per-view next weekend. Here, she came out with the baseball bat. They wanted to make it very clear this is an extreme rules match. There's going to be baseball bats. There's going to be chairs. Anything goes. Liv Morgan has a shot. She has a prayer because anything goes. It's not just a straight wrestling match. She can use anything she wants. So maybe she actually has a shot to get another win over Ronda Rousey. That's what they should be trying to do. They should be trying to convince you that she has a chance. I don't think she has a very good one. Again, it's hard for me to buy into it, but you can't say that they're not at least trying to give her some credibility going into this match. And if you didn't see it, by the way, I should mention this. There is a video that is up on the Up Up Down Down channel. Xavier Woods posted a Packy One Chip Challenge video. It's about 15 minutes long. This was backstage at a recent event because a lot of the wrestlers are crowding around. You see LA Knight, and there's Braun Strowman, and there's Raquel. You know, clearly standing away from Braun, which I thought was interesting. Kofi is there, like different, you know, people from the SmackDown roster. And the idea was, it was Braun's idea. Braun apparently duped them because he went to Liv and said, look, Xavier said that if you'll do this one chip challenge, then he'll do it. This is all news to Xavier. But he told Xavier the same thing. Hey, Liv said she would do this if you do it. So they end up doing this Packy One Chip Challenge, and of course they paid a very heavy price for it. Liv, at first, when she started, you know, she ate the chip, and she seemed to be taking it okay, but then as the minutes ticked on, you could see she was in great distress, this woman. Tears are streaming down her face. She looks like she's going to vomit. At one point, she's got her head in the garbage can. Xavier's freaking out. Braun, of course, is laughing, and he's egging them on. They're drinking water. I don't think you're supposed to drink water. I think you're supposed to drink milk. So somebody brings them some like milk and creamer. Shayna Baszler's watching. I don't know why you would subject yourself to this kind of torture. Why? Why put yourself through that? Apparently these chips also turn your tongue blue. I guess that's part of the gimmick. Your tongue turns colors. So yeah, then Karrion Kross showed up. He's like heard the commotion. He comes over and sees what's going on. And he said the same thing. Karrion's watching this and he's like smiling. He goes, why? Why would you do this? And Scarlett is there. She's trying to look up instructions on her phone on how to find relief. Awful. So if you want to see pain and suffering, you can go find that video. It's on the Up Up Down Down channel. So we go backstage. We see Kevin Owens, Drew McIntyre, and Johnny Gargano. Talking about their upcoming main event later in the show. It's going to be a six-man tag, we find out. It's going to be Drew, it's going to be Johnny, and it's going to be KO taking on Austin Theory, Otis, and Chad Gable. McIntyre joked about Gargano trusting Owens, which is a dangerous thing to do. Owens ends up, you know, leaving them, and he's walking down the hallway, and he passes the Maximum Male Mid-Carders, and he sees them doing their stupid pose. So he keeps on walking. And, well, actually, what did he say? He said something to Mace. I think he told him to put his arm up or something. It would make the pose more cool. So anyway, he keeps walking. Then he sees Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn, who I guess, I don't know why, he's not in the Bloodline locker room. He's just kind of sitting there on the side. He looks all sad and depressed. And he locks eyes with KO. He stands up. He's staring at Kevin. Kevin is staring at him, looking at his honorary Oos shirt and just kind of laughing to himself. Says to Sammy, dude, you got to get a different shirt. And he walked off. Long-term storytelling is what we're getting here. the slow build to the eventual reunion between the two. They will take down the Usos and will take the tag team titles. But we're not there yet. We still have time. This is not a story that needs to be rushed. Then we had the best segment on the entire show. This was my segment of the night here. It was Imperium coming to the ring for a promo. We had Walter. We had Ludwig Kaiser, and Mr. Giovanni Vinci down to the ring. So Kaiser had the mic. He called the brawling brutes an insult to the ring they found so sacred. And Vinci said that none of them exhibit the qualities of a champion, and he pointed to Walter as a man who has all of the qualities of a champion. And then Walter spoke. He said that he would defeat Sheamus next week, next Friday. A week from tonight, they're billing it as the season premiere of SmackDown. It's going to be the rematch for the Intercontinental Championship. It's going to be Walter. It's going to be Sheamus. You know, we've been hearing a lot of stories online about potential belt redesigns in this company, some that were already in the works before Triple H even took over. But now that he has taken over, he's kind of made it more of a priority, and we could potentially be seeing all of the belts, even the 24/7 joke belt. Could be getting a facelift. They could all be getting a new look soon. And I wonder if they're saving that for these season premieres. Because Raw, I think, has its season premiere this Monday. SmackDown is going to have its season premiere next Friday. It would seem to me that if you were going to unveil some new titles, that would be the best time to do it. And my hope would be I would love to see Walter walk out on SmackDown next week with a brand new Intercontinental title. Preferably a version of the old Intercontinental title. The one thing I read, and I don't know where I saw this, is that at least some of these designs are more egg-shaped, which gives me pause because we had an egg-shaped Intercontinental title in the Attitude Era. That's not the title I want to see. I don't want an egg as the Intercontinental Championship. But maybe we'll see a new title next week when he comes out to defend against Sheamus. We're going to get our rematch next week. I am very much looking forward to that. He said that they are going to grind down all three brawling brutes. They're going to grind them down to dust. Of course, they're having a Donnybrook six-man tag the very next night at Extreme Rules. So that brought out Sheamus. Sheamus mentioned that Ridge and Butch were not here tonight. They're stuck in Florida due to the hurricane. But he said the King of Bangers was here tonight to kick all their heads off by himself. I think there was a porn star who called himself that at one point. Back in the Jenna Jameson day, right? The King of Bangers. So, Sheamus talking about his match with Walter coming up next week. And Kaiser and Vinci charged at him in the aisleway, but he took them out with a shillelagh. He had a shillelagh that was hidden. He got in the ring and he tossed the shillelagh out because it was just him and Walter in the ring. And he was like Sting back in the day when he would come and confront the NWO. There were a few times where he took the bat and he extended his arm and he just dropped it. That's what Sheamus did with the shillelagh, and they started brawling. They started duking it out here in the middle of the ring, trading blows. Sheamus hit a knee strike. He was setting up with a brogue kick. Vinci and Kaiser, they got involved again. They beat him down 3-on-1. And Walter landed a series of hard chops. He hit a kick to the face. Before delivering a power bomb, Sheamus was laying on the mat as Imperium took their leave. So we see all three members of Imperium walking to the back. Sheamus crawls over to the microphone on the mat, and he's breathing heavily into the microphone, right? Just like you would expect the King of Bangers to do, heavy breathing. So he's breathing heavily into the microphone, and he looks at Imperium in the aisleway, and he asks Walter, he goes, "Is that all you got?" Walter stops and he turns around to look at him like, "What did you just say?" He goes, "Is that all you got?" He says, "You got to do better than that." All three members of Imperium come back down to the ring, and they dole out more punishment with the shillelagh, and it ends with Walter clubbing him right across the chest with it, and he left Sheamus laying at the end of the segment. This was great. This was a great way to put heat on Imperium heading into not only the championship match next Friday, but again, they have a six-man tag at the pay-per-view. And it worked out that Holland and Butch, if they really were unable to come to the show, it worked out that they weren't there. because it showed Sheamus he doesn't need them. Maybe he's stupid, but he's willing to stand up to these guys one on three. And he got laid out because of it, but it shows, you know, that he's a tough guy and he can take care of business by himself. But again, it also put more heat on Imperium, and people want to see Sheamus win that championship. I still don't think it's going to happen next week. I would love for them to hold off. Walter, I think, deserves more time with the title before Sheamus takes it from him at WrestleMania. I want that to be the WrestleMania match. And when he wins it, I want it to be on a big stage like WrestleMania. I want it to be on a big stage in front of a big crowd. You know, if he wins it next week and then they kind of play hot potato with it and then you pay it off at a WrestleMania match, he's already won it. That's the story. The story is that Sheamus has never, ever been the Intercontinental Champion before. So you only get one time, one chance to win that championship for the very first time. And it's a great excuse also to have them run the match back, you know, down the road. You could say, well, if Walter pins him next week, then he's been beaten twice. Why would there be a need for a third match? And you're right, there wouldn't be. But you've got 5 or 6 months where you can have Sheamus work his way back up to that point where he gets one more shot. That's the story they should tell. I'm not gonna cry about it if he wins next week. I think it'll be, you know, a nice moment, but you gotta go for the top moment. Top moment will be at WrestleMania if they could hold off that. We had Bayley up next, going one-on-one with Shotzi Blackheart, who has her tank back. Look at what Triple H has done for Shotzi since he came to power here on the main roster. He turned her back babyface, which is what she should have been anyway from the beginning, and he gave her tank back. TCB says on it. She comes out, she shoots something out of the tank. Now they have it where she pushes a button and it just shoots pyro out of the tank gun. Unfortunately, that's the only good thing I could say about any of this, because this match was no good. There was one point where Bayley got her knee slammed into the turnbuckle. She took a slam from Shotzi, her knee jammed right into the turnbuckle, and she was limping on it a little bit after. It was scary, because here's a woman who missed over a year recovering from a torn ACL. She had a very serious knee injury, so that was not good. Bayley won with the rose plant, which I know I've said it before, I'll say it again, looks awful as a finish. It is a terrible looking finish. I don't know if it's just the way that she executes it, but it is not a move that should be used as a way to finish her matches. She's got to find something better than this. She hit a second sloppy rose plant when the match was over, went outside, grabbed a ladder from under the ring. She placed Shotzi in the ladder. And then she was climbing up on the rope. She was threatening to come off and right on top of the ladder, right on top of Shotzi. When Bianca Belair's music hit, the Raw Women's Champion runs down to the ring, sprints down to make the save, and she helped Shotzi out of the ladder. Bayley, though, attacked Bianca from behind, but Bianca was able to get her up in position for the KOD. She was going to KOD her on the ladder. Bayley slipped out, and she ran for the hills. The post-match stuff, you know, was fine, but again, the match itself was just, I don't have anything good to say about that match. Backstage, Maxxine Dupri is praising Mason Mansoor. They're still holding their stupid pose. And she's counting down the final seconds before they set the new world record, or Canadian record, whatever the record is. So she's counting down, she gets to about 6. And Max returns, and he pops Mansoor right in the face and knocks him down. And Max Dupri says, you know what, you guys are clowns. You're more worried about posing than you are winning. And he said that you can 86 this. He tossed his leather belt, which had a Maximum Male model belt buckle on it. He tossed it over at them and said, you can keep it because it was never for me. And then he dropped a, yeah. And he walked off. And he didn't do it the way he usually does it. You know, usually, yeah, he was very animated when he was in NXT. He'd go, yeah! Well, he didn't do that here. He just said, yeah, and he walked off. But there it is. There it is. LA Knight is back. The next time we see him on TV, my only hope is that they actually call him LA Knight. There should be no remnants left of Max Dupri. The name, the look, everything about it has to be junked. It has to be thrown into a trash can and set on fire. The next time we see him, he should be L.A. Knight. He never should have been part of this stupid group to begin with, but at least Triple H had enough sense to look at this and go, what the fuck are you doing with this guy? This guy could be money. We could use him as a heel. We could use him as a babyface. He could be the Intercontinental Champion one day. He could be the WWE Champion one day. Absolutely he could be. Whatever you do with him has to be better than this. This is a joke gimmick. This is a comedy gimmick. Why are you wasting him in this for? You're trying to get over two guys you're never going to seriously push. All it's going to do is drag him down. I said that from day one. Thank God Triple H had enough sense to intervene and recognize that. He's the one who brought LA Knight into NXT. He knows this. He knew this from the beginning. He couldn't wait to get in there and start making changes. This is one of the changes that he couldn't wait to make. He saved this man's career. If Vince McMahon did not resign when he did, LA Knight would have been dead. Triple H is saving this man's career. This is a rescue mission, is what this is. So thank God Triple H has enough sense to realize that, and we're getting back LA Knight. And that led us to our main event. Drew McIntyre, Johnny Gargano, and Kevin Owens. Our second Panda Express reunion of the week. Taking on Austin Theory, Chad Gable, and Otis of the Alpha Academy. To begin the match, we had Michael Cole acknowledging that Drew McIntyre and Johnny Gargano were the Evolve Tag Team Champions once upon a time. And he acknowledged Drew McIntyre as the Evolve and the Dragon Gate champion. So if you were wondering, hey, whatever happened to Gabe Sapolsky? Well, as I said on the podcast this past Sunday, Gabe Sapolsky is back in WWE. Triple H has brought him back. He is now a creative consultant for the main roster, no longer with NXT. He is one of Triple H's right-hand men on the main roster now. If you wanted to know if Gabe Sapolsky was back, here you go. We got ourselves not only an Evolve mention, but a Dragon Gate mention here in the SmackDown main event. Welcome back, Gabe. That's how you can tell that. So the heels isolated Gargano during the final break. He tried one final beat on Chad Gable. He got pulled into a Northern Lights suplex, though, for a near fall. Gargano attempted to tag in Drew McIntyre, but Theory pulled him down from ringside. Gable countered an enziguri from Gargano into an ankle lock. Gargano managed to escape. I guess that's why they call it the Gargano escape. There you go. So he escaped. He made the tag to Kevin Owens, who hit a DDT on Theory, followed by a fisherman's buster. Owens hit a corner cannonball to Gable and a senton from the top. Otis broke up the pin. McIntyre and Theory tagged into the match and Drew threw Theory across the ring and knocked Otis from the apron. He kicked up and after a second overhead toss, set up for the Claymore kick. Theory rolled out of the ring and McIntyre followed him. Otis attacked McIntyre at ringside. Owens and Gargano, though, show up. They hit a double super kick to Otis and Gable made the save. They tried to put Otis onto the announce desk or through the announce desk. Gable made the save. He climbed up onto the table with Owens instead. Kevin Owens then caught Chad Gable with a stunner on top of the announce desk. And then immediately after that in the ring, Drew McIntyre hit the game-winning Claymore kick to Austin Theory. Now, you're going to have to take my word for this because if you watched the show, you didn't see either of these things. And the reason that you didn't see either of these things is because the production team missed it. You didn't see the stunner. You didn't see the Claymore kick. But you know what happened. That's how Drew McIntyre won the match. Just take my word for it. The production team missed both spots, the final two climactic spots of this main event. And they missed them both. I'm reminded of the segment many years ago with Eric Bischoff when he went storming into the production truck looking for Kevin Dunn. And he found him in the corner and he said, Kevin Dunn, what the hell was that? That's what I was saying when this match was over. Kevin Dunn, what the hell was that? A production snafu. here at the end of this match. Unbelievable. The two final big moments of the match, and we both missed them. We missed both of them.
Fuck Kevin Dunn.
See, John Moxley was right. Never doubt John Moxley. So after the match, McIntyre whipped Theory to close out the show, giving Karrion Kross a little show for what he can expect at Extreme Rules next weekend. And that was SmackDown. I thought SmackDown was a solid show tonight, all things considered. They were at a bit of a handicap with, obviously, some of the people who were missing. It was pretty clear that at least part of the show had to be rewritten. The Imperium segment was my favorite segment, I think the best part of the entire show. The main event was fun, aside from the fuck-up there at the end. That wasn't their fault, the wrestler's fault. But I will say there had been better SmackDown since Triple H took over. From an in-ring standpoint, this was not one of those weeks where the show was carried by, you know, any specific match. There have been weeks where they have some really good matches and maybe a really good backstage segment or something. It was the Imperium segment, and then everything else was just kind of there. But they furthered a lot of the stories heading into the pay-per-view, including the Bloodline stuff, with Sammy and Jey Uso in the back, the first sign that LA Knight is finally back. So there was some good stuff on the show tonight. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. See if you concur. 68% of you have given this show tonight a thumbs up. 21% thumbs in the middle. And 10.6% of you have given SmackDown a thumbs down. And you can always vote in these polls on Twitter, at Solomonster. That is the place to go. Here, before I get into your super chats, I do want to mention this. I mentioned it the other day. We're gearing up next Wednesday, less than a week away, live here on the YouTube channel, 1 o'clock Eastern on Wednesday, October 5th. 25 years to the day. The very first Hell in a Cell. As I choked to death here. I was so amazed by this that I'm going to choke to death and there will be no watch-along. But there will be a Hell in a Cell watch-along 25 years later. So I hope you will join me. It will be open to everyone, but the chat will be members only. So everybody who's going to be hanging out with me and chatting about this match, if you got questions, comments, we'll hang out. The chat will be members only. So I'm looking forward to that. So again, 1 o'clock Eastern, that's coming up on Wednesday afternoon. And I also want to give a shout out to our good friends over at Wrestle Rumble. The Big Three contest is coming up. Extreme Rules is next Saturday. You've got another week to enter. Next Saturday is the deadline. You can enter. It's only $1 to enter the contest. You can enter as many times as you want for the chance to win one of those three championship belts that you see, the classic belts, Winged Eagle, Big Gold, or the ECW World Heavyweight Championship. And then live on the Extreme Rules Review on YouTube next Saturday, I will pick a winner for each one of those belts. We'll have a first, second, and third place winner. So go to WrestleRumble.com. You can put your entry in. Again, it's only $1 to enter. Hopefully, one of you in the chat will walk away with all three of those belts. Who wouldn't want to walk away with a Winged Eagle or a Big Gold belt? Come on. I want you to win. I want to have some winners here. Let's go to the videotape, as Warner Wolf used to say. For those of you who even know who Warner Wolf is, which is probably not very many of you. We've got Kevin Dunn's beaver. I'm not very happy with Kevin Dunn's beaver tonight after what happened there in the main event. He says, you already know. Yeah, I already know. Of course I do. Thank you, Kevin Dunn's beaver, though, for the $2. Shin Akuma, $5 super chat. Everyone out there, stay safe. We have to live as long as possible to see the Solomonsters' present and future content. You guys made Wednesday's stream fun. Thank you, Shin. It's always good to see you in the chat. Internet Explorer user 2014 is back. Our good friend from the other night with his Internet Explorer browser. With the rumors of AEW signing CM Punk, how do you think a feud with Hangman Page or the Bucks would be? Comments don't seem to load. Help. Well, that's what you get for using Internet Explorer. You're only about a year behind. Poor guy. This poor guy, he's stuck in a time warp. Somebody has to convince him to start using Chrome. I mean, this guy is, he's in bad shape. Justin Jack, have you heard of the elusive mountain chicken? I have not. Boots, with the 316, a small contribution for the liquor fund. I got it right over there. You don't see it, but I have it right over there. It's a little piggy bank. We'll call that the liquor fund. Joshua Edwards, why does Ricochet look like Andrew Tate? I don't know. Good question. Brother! Hey, Saint and Entertainment, thank you for the $2. I'll get to yours in a second here. Isaiah Lucero with the $4.99. Who's your top three pro wrestling ring announcers? Well, we got to go Howard Finkel, number one. I mean, there's no debate about that. Howard Finkel. Howard Finkel is my number one, number two, and number three. For being perfectly honest. I mean, there have been a lot of good ones, but there's only one Fink. You know, Gary Michael Capetta was always very good. Again, I wasn't a big NWA, WCW guy back then at that time, so I didn't grow up on him as much as I did Finkel, but I watched enough of it to where he had that very unique voice. So, like, you hear him speak and you know right away who it is. You know, he's got that very unique tone in his voice. I might go with him number two. And as far as a number three, all-time ring announcer. You know, I don't know. I kind of look at those two when I think of just the classic pro wrestling ring announcer. Those are the voices I hear. You look at the ring announcers today, and Justin Roberts is very good. And I tell you what, you know who's really good, actually? Samantha Irvin. You know, we heard her on SmackDown tonight. Samantha Irvin is actually very good, I think. I actually like it when Imperium comes out, the way that she says it. You know, she just says it with such conviction in her voice. Coming down to the ring, it's Ludwig Kaiser, Giovanni Vinci, and Gunther. Just the way she says it. Almost makes Gunther sound like a good name. It's not Walter, but she at least makes it sound very cool. Tony Chimmel. You know, he used to announce Edge, the Rated R Superstar. I guess I gotta show Chimmel some love, right? Maybe we'll go Fink, Capetta, and Chimmel, maybe. I don't know. All you need to know is that Fink is on the list. That's it. That's all you need. Rodimus Prime, rest in peace, Antonio Inoki, one of the greatest to ever do it, forever a legend. We've got Mistiff, we'll call him Mistiff. I don't know how to pronounce that, with the $2. Just showing some love. Rest in peace, Antonio Inoki. Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate the $2. Insanity's Queen Fire Panda with the $5. Here is my tribute to the Lord of the Pandas. Are we contributing to the Lord of the Pandas, or are we contributing to the liquor fund here? I'm getting conflicting signals here from you guys. Rizzo with the $9.99, we may have gotten away for AEW to write off Andrade. A stipulation for next Friday is if he loses, he leaves AEW forever. Well, then you know what? That might just be the thing to do. Because I have not been impressed by what they have been doing with Andrade, and I do believe that if he were to end up back in WWE, that he would have a better chance than he did the first time. So, I don't know what his contract status is. Again, this, I guess, is what's being mentioned on Rampage right now. Or I guess Rampage is over now, but if that is, in fact, the stipulation, and if he is going to be leaving the company, then maybe it's in his and everybody's best interest. King Bling Blah, what pay-per-views are gone in 2023 and what replaces them? You know, if it were up to me, there would not be a monthly pay-per-view in WWE. They have a schedule of... Now, if you take away the Saudi Arabia shows, so we're just talking the regular shows, they have one a month, right? So they have 12 plus the Saudi shows. I think that's the typical schedule. And I said this years ago. I don't think you need to cut it in half. I think if you had eight, you know, or somewhere around that number would be a good number. I know people are so used to it, but I don't think you need a pay-per-view every single month. So I don't necessarily think they need to be replaced. What would I get rid of? I would get rid of Hell in a Cell and TLC to start with. Hell in a Cell never should have been a pay-per-view to begin with. Get rid of those two. Start with those. I'd have to look at the full schedule to see what they are. Extreme Rules doesn't bother me as much, even though I think you could probably get rid of that one too. But for sure, Hell in a Cell and TLC, I think, are completely unnecessary. You got the Royal Rumble. You've got WrestleMania. You've got SummerSlam Survivor Series now with War Games, which is not an annual thing. So far, it's only this year. It's TBD if it's going to end up being an annual thing. And then I would bring back King of the Ring. I think it's been long enough. I know King of the Ring wasn't making them a lot of money there towards the end in 2002. That was the last pay-per-view version of it that they did. I think it's been 20 years. I think it's worth going back now and trying to make King of the Ring a meaningful pay-per-view again, where the winner actually gets something tangible, whether it's a championship match at the next pay-per-view or whatever it may be. I would like to see them give King of the Ring another shot as a standalone pay-per-view. So you'd have the Rumble, WrestleMania, King of the Ring, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Money in the Bank. That's fine. You want to have Money in the Bank. It's become a big show for them. And again, maybe one or two others, and I think that's all you need. I really do. And maybe you can do it where those months where there's no quote-unquote regular pay-per-view, maybe those are the months where you have a Saudi Arabia show. So that the Saudi shows can fill the gaps for the missing pay-per-views. You get rid of Hell in a Cell on TLC. There you go. That's all you need. I mean, I don't think it's a complicated thing at all. Just got to look at the calendar and figure out where things fit. Daniel Shelton, in honor of my boy Fan, in honor of my boy Ian, I'm sorry. Rest in peace, Ian Mankind. Red Emissary of Darkness, with the $5 super chat. Triple H is making the same mistake Vince did with Bayley in her heel run. They never give us a break from her and jam her down our throats endlessly. I don't know if it's jamming her down our throats, but there's definitely something that's been missing with this run. I think the stipulation for Extreme Rules, and I'm going to do all my predictions, by the way, on Sunday. My Extreme Rules predictions will be on episode 776. But the fact that they are doing a ladder match, which came out of nowhere, I understand they want all gimmick matches on this show. Last year, they had almost no gimmick matches except the main event. So now they've gone the complete opposite way. And every match is having some kind of extreme stipulation. This one is just tacked on for no reason. Except, now think about this. If you were going to beat Bianca Belair, because she is one of the more protected people on that roster, you would want to beat her in a way where she doesn't have to take a pinfall loss. I think that's why they added the ladder stipulation. I think they put the ladder stipulation in this match because it's a way for Bianca to lose without having to be pinned. So even if they put the championship on Bayley, it still feels like something is missing. And maybe if she wins the title, maybe that'll help a little bit. But there's definitely something missing from this damage control stuff so far. I made that comment the other day. I'm not digging it. And Bayley can be great. Bayley was one of the most entertaining parts of the pandemic era shows. So it's not like, oh, Bayley is terrible and Bayley is this or that. Something is off. Something is missing, and maybe it has to do with the booking. Maybe she's miscast as a heel. She was very entertaining as a heel 2 years ago. But this run so far, ever since she came back, it's not working. Something is off. Something is missing. Alonzo Cruz with the $1.99. New Japan should do a tournament in honor of Inoki. Oh, I'm sure they're going to do something. Absolutely going to do something in honor of Inoki. They might even create some kind of annual tradition in his name. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, the company that he founded, larger than life, I'm sure they're going to honor him in some way. Bernard Frederick, $10 super chat. Hey, Bernard, thank you, brother. Do you think that the segment with Roman and Sami Zayn from last week took Roman Reigns off his tribal chief character there was a glimpse of his old babyface persona at the end of the segment? I didn't see that at all. That was him being disingenuous. That was that. You know what that was? That was Bret Hart when he reunited the Hart Foundation. When he flashed that mischievous smile at the camera, that smirk. Like, oh, I wanna get the family back together. I love you guys. I care about you guys. No, he didn't. He wanted backup. He wanted protection. They were useful to him. That's what that look was. That was basically what Roman Reigns did in the segment last week. There was nothing about that segment at all that made me think, oh, it reminds me of Roman when he was a baby boy, because he was smiling. It was a disingenuous smile. There was nothing about it that reminded me of him as a baby boy. Thankfully, there's nothing about this Roman Reigns character that reminds me of the babyface Roman Reigns, and I'd like for them to keep it that way. Al Fiss, would you ever go on Quizzlemania? I don't know, man. Those shows are like 8 hours long. I don't think I could sit in one position for that long. From what I've seen of those, they're never ending. I don't know. I think I would do well, but I don't know. They seem to have enough people as it is. I don't think they need me. Aussie of Steel with the $4 super chat. How's it going? Unfortunately, I had to miss the Raw stream because of my aunt's funeral, but it's nice to be back. Well, I'm very sorry to hear about your aunt. My condolences. I hope you are doing better. And it is good to have you back.
Yeah, yeah.
There it is, Bushwhacker Solo Monster. There it is. The new $15 super chat, by the way. That used to be a lot higher, but, you know, we are heading into the 15-year anniversary here in November. And in case it starts popping up more frequently, I said, you know, I want one that I like in that $15 spot. So that's the new $15 super chat. Rizzo, I'm sure this is not a bold prediction, but I see Charlotte coming back next Saturday, costing Ronda the championship. I cannot wait for next Saturday. I don't want to give away my predictions, but it's a pretty good one. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, Liv goes 3-0 against Ronda because of shenanigans. Kevin Dunn's Beaver with the $2. WWF Panda against Panda Express Panda. Book it. Well, the Panda Express Panda would absolutely beat the shit out of the WWF Panda. Mario Ballantyne, $3 super chat. I was there in the front row. There was a Sammy for Prime Minister's side. Over big with the crowd. Nakamura lost to Walter in a dark match. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show. Tell me, by the way, if Mario's in the live chat, what was the reaction live in the building to Hit Row? Because I said, when I was talking about them before, I said it sounded cold as a block of ice. So did it just not translate on TV? Am I just not hearing it? Or did it go over like a wet fart in the building, kind of like it did on TV? Tripod says, love you, Solo Monster. Have a great weekend. I love you too, Tripod. And I hope you have a great weekend as well. Insanity's Queen Fire Panda with the $5. LA Knight is back. Papa H has done it again. Hashtag Team Doofus Son-in-Law. One thing you will not hear me doing is calling him Papa H. I cannot bring myself to do that. I see that on social media all the time. Papa H. To me, that's going a little too far. That's a little weird. It's a little weird. Hey, Steve Mello in the chat Shout out to Steve, by the way. Today is Steve's birthday, everybody. Steve is the one who is responsible for much of the graphics that you see here on this channel. He is a good friend of mine and of the podcast. And today is his birthday, and he is spending part of his birthday here in the chat with all of you. So wish Steve Mello a happy birthday. Yes, they did steal your sign idea. He had a sign. They were up in Canada weeks ago. And he had the sign that said KO for Prime Minister. And Kevin Owens saw it and he liked the sign. He posed with it. He took pictures with it. Somebody must have seen that. They got the idea and they made themselves a Sami Zayn sign tonight. See, you're a trailblazer is what you are. You're what they call an influencer. Steve is an influencer. How about that? Dr. Dakota Scorpio, who will reach 100 wins first, the Mets or the Braves? I don't even know who won the game tonight. It's tough, man. Yeah, they're tough. You know, you got to give them credit. But as far as who gets to 100 first, I got to go with the Mets. I got to go with my Mets. Can't vote against the Mets. Love Lie, update, my second speech today was much better than the last time. Thanks for the advice. Also, great review tonight. Well, I'm happy for the update. I was wondering what happened with that. He was talking last week about how do you give a speech in front of people, and I gave him some advice, and I'm very happy to see that it went well. Sainted Entertainment, all-time favorite wrestling gear, shirt and mask. Oh, God. All-time favorite mask is probably the original Kane mask. The original Kane mask is fucking great. So I think I would have to go Kane. Wrestling gear. I mean, I don't know. Bret Hart made pink look cool. So maybe we'll go with Bret in 94. Bret in 94. You know, NXT now has the paint splatter. Bret in 94 had gear made that was actually kind of reminded me of the Nasty Boys in a way. I don't know if it was it was kind of like a paint splatter design on like a black singlet. It looked great. So maybe I'd go with that. I think that was actually the best gear that he ever had. Pretty sure that was from 94. And the mask, like I said, I would go with Kane. Bliss fan in the chat predictably says The Fiend. He thinks the Fiend mask is the best mask in wrestling history. I knew he was going to say that, too, before I even saw that in the chat. I said, I know if Bliss fan hears that question, I know exactly what he's going to say. And he did not disappoint. Joseph Brooks, what was your favorite Rock catchphrase? Mine, I remember from when I was a little boy, was when he would tell the interviewer to listen because they are chanting the Rock's name. And then the crowd would chant Rock. He used to call Kevin Kelly a hermaphrodite. That was always fun. You would call him Hermie. Era, let's get the Hermie chant here in the chat. Ed Swoggle. Happy belated birthday. What? You know what? Twist would destroy the Sammy bloodline storyline if they write it that Jay was right about Sammy's intentions. That would be interesting. I was thinking about that tonight, too, that, you know, Jay is bringing up, I don't trust you, I see right through you, and he's the only member of the bloodline who obviously feels that way. What if it turns out that he was right all along? But it just doesn't work, I don't think, if you wanted to. Well, I mean, I guess it could. I mean, he could turn against the bloodline and then be with KO and take the titles from the Usos, but I just think it works better if you get that emotional beatdown where they break his heart and then they break his bones, you know, and then KO has to kind of come to his rescue. I just think that story, it's more dramatic that way. I think it works better that way. But yes, that could very well be an interesting twist on the storyline. Absolutely. Jay ends up being right all along. He saw something that the other members of the bloodline did not. But what does that make Sammy then? I guess the Bloodline is a heel faction, so it could still make Sammy a babyface. And it would make him not look like a complete goofball. But I just like the idea of him, you know, you want to play into, if you get to turn him babyface again, I think is the end goal of this. If you want to play off people's emotions, it's just, you get that devastating moment where he just, you know, he gets kicked out of the Bloodline, and it's just this vicious beatdown and this vicious attack. I don't know. I have to think about that. If you were to intentionally cost the Bloodline the War Games match. Yeah, but that wouldn't make a lot of sense either. If he's in the match and he's spending most of the match fighting alongside them, why would he then swerve them at the end? That's why I think it just makes more sense if he fucks up and they kick him out. I like that story more. You gotta make him suffer. That's right. You gotta make Sammy suffer. You gotta tug at the heartstrings of people as they watch and they plead and they beg, no, don't beat him up. Don't beat up Sammy. HBKC83, these damn Mets piss me off tonight. Well, that's not good. I take it they did not win. Brandon Proctor with the $1 super chat. Thank you, Brandon. Insanity's Queen Fire Panda, here's the tribute to the liquor fund you are looking for, my lord. Thank you. Juan Ocampo, what's Plumber Moxley's opinion on Kevin Dunnigan? I don't know. You got to ask the guy. He's sulking over in the corner. He's supposed to be on vacation right now, so he's not in a very good mood. I can ask him what he thinks of Kevin Dunn.
Fuck Kevin Dunn.
There you go. Wink the Cosmic Grandma with a $4.99 super chat. What wrestler would you pick if they had to come out to Hall and Oates, and what song would it be? Well, if Vince McMahon was still wrestling, I would say it would be Out of Touch that he would come out to, which is my all-time favorite song. Frankly, every time I would see Max Dupree come out with the Maximum Male Mid-Carters, I would always think of Say It Isn't So. I always thought that would be an appropriate song. Al Fiss, how do you get the WWE title off of Roman Reigns without losing? I talked about this weeks ago on the podcast. It was an idea floating around that I think absolutely would have made a ton of sense for Survivor Series. This was before they announced War Games, where you have a ladder match. And it could be with anybody. It doesn't even have to be Seth Rollins. I mean, the idea was Seth Rollins, but it could be with anybody. Both belts hanging above the ring, and Roman pulls down the Universal. Rollins or whoever the other person is pulls down the WWE. They have to figure out what to do, and the determination is made that Roman keeps the Universal and the other person wins the WWE, and that way you take it off Roman without pinning him. Would seem to be the way that makes the most sense. I mean, you could take the championship away from him, but at this point he's had it for so long, it would be kind of weird to all of a sudden out of nowhere have him stripped of it or something, because it's a unified title. That's the thing. Now, some people talk about this, like, how come he hasn't defended the WWE title? It's weird because he's still carrying two belts when he comes out, but they're very clear that it is a unified championship. Therefore, it is not to be defended separately. That's the problem. If it was separate, then he hasn't defended the WWE title technically since, you know, on its own since WrestleMania when he won it. So you could say, well, you haven't defended the title, therefore, you know, you're being stripped of it. But you can't do that. It's a unified title. They've made it very clear. The two have been fused into one, in effect. So the ladder match idea would probably just make the most sense and be the easiest out of all of them, to be honest with you. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, why did the panda quit the wrestling business? Because it wanted to get the F out. I'll show myself out, thank you. He's two emojis in the super chat. Not one of them is a panda emoji. That is a fail. Hey, Pharaoh's perspective. What's going on, Pharaoh? Joseph Brooks with a 1999 super chat. Thank you for the super chat. Thank you. WWE Universe, thank you for the super chat. Joseph Brooks says, I'm not saying this will ever happen, but I am just throwing this out there. Do you think Triple H would ever consider doing a WCW one-night stand? Over the years, people appreciate what WCW was as opposed to being conditioned to hate it. No, I don't see that happening. It's been too long. I mean, they did an ECW one-night stand because they never had a proper ending to ECW. It just ended. WCW at least had a final Nitro in Panama City Beach. They had a final show that they promoted. You knew that it was the end. ECW never had that. ECW had a cult following, and it was only a few years removed. It was still kind of fresh in people's minds, so it made sense to try an ECW one-night stand, and it was a big success, which is why they brought it back after that again for a second time. WCW has been over 20 years, and a lot of those WCW guys, you don't look at them as WCW guys anymore. They're WWE guys now. Goldberg is a WWE guy. He's been in WWE for so long, people don't look at him as a WCW guy. How many WCW guys are even left? They're not going to have Hogan in a match, right? So you can forget about him. Goldberg, I just mentioned him. DDP is retired. Booker T is retired. Scott Steiner is basically retired. Jericho is working for another company. Sting is working for another company. Lex Luger is not wrestling anymore. What kind of WCW one-night stand are you going to do? You couldn't even do one if you wanted to. So, no. The time has come and gone to do anything like that. WCW does not need a one-night stand. Von Tell with the $5 super chat. Yeah, Prince Iakea. I wonder what Prince... See what Prince Iakea is doing. If Prince Iakea and El Dandy aren't busy, you can do Prince Iakea and El Dandy. We know that Disco Inferno doesn't have anything going on. Maybe you could throw him in there too, make it a package deal. There you go. There's your WCW one night stand. Not a very appealing show. Vontel. Buy, sell, or rent. Angle Austin comedic segments, Hollywood Rocks run, Eddie Guerrero's title win at No Way Out in 2000. I'm going to buy Hollywood Rock. I'm going to rent Eddie's win, and I'm going to sell Angle and Austin's comedic set. And I love the Angle and Austin segment, but I'm going to have to sell those. Mario says, Hit Row got a half-ass cheer, slow golf clap. Okay, so I'm not crazy. So I wasn't just hearing things. Bob the Builder. Andrade in a Loser Leaves AEW match next week. Yeah, everybody's telling me that he's in a Loser Leaves AEW match. Not one person has told me who it's against. Not one person has told me who the opponent is. Maybe the opponent is going to lose and leave AEW. Who is he facing? Who is he wrestling next week? Pharaoh's perspective, thank you for the $1.99. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, did you know Bray had this shirt design called Watch Me Whip, Watch Me Bray Bray? Lucky for us, it never saw the light of day. What? Is that real? That can't be real. Bob the Builder, with Tony Khan not giving anybody releases and with Rampage being live next week, I think it's a way to gain interest for Rampage next week regarding Andrade. So he is wrestling 10 from the Dark Order. Well, I mean, look, I don't know. If 10 loses, nobody's gonna care. So I could easily see 10 losing and just leaving. Or you know what? 10 loses. And he goes away for a while, and he comes back repackaged with no mask, because technically it would be a totally different character. I bet you that's what happens. But I'm sure, look, we'll find out during the week if there's anything to the Andrade situation. I'm sure word will leak if his status is different than what everybody is aware of it being. I'm not aware of him either getting his release, because nobody is getting a release right now in AEW, but I don't know, maybe he signed a shorter contract. Maybe his contract is up. Who knows? But now that I know who his opponent is, it could very well be Ten losing his mask and coming back as either Preston Vance, or I guess he'd have to be something completely different because they've already referred to him on TV as Preston Vance. So maybe they do a total repackaging on him. He comes back with a new name. Bernard Frederick. Oh, the mask is on the line. Oh, I see. Okay. See, I'm getting this piecemeal from you guys. You're doing a terrible job. This is why you are not news reporters. You're only giving me the story in bits and pieces. So it's mask against career. All right, so then Ten is going to lose his mask. Big deal. Bernard says, do you think that they are going to book Drew McIntyre to lose back-to-back pay-per-views? I think that it's more important for Karrion Kross to win that match next weekend than it is for Drew McIntyre to win. It's not ideal for him to lose back-to-back matches like that, but it's more important that Karrion Kross get the win in his first match. Kevin Dunn's Beaver says, what about my father?
Fuck Kevin Dunn.
That's what I think of your dad. Bobby's World, 2110, just got in from work, stopping in to drop some love. Sad to hear about Inoki's death, another legend gone. Pharaoh's Perspective, thank you for the $4.99. Philip Hansen, they can do the ladder match at TLC to take one title off of Roman. You think Roman is working TLC? That's funny. You're a funny guy. Pharaoh's Perspective, thanks for giving me something to look forward to weekly when I am down and out. I want to do what you do. Any advice? Well, don't do it the way that I do it. It's work, 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 very little sleep. I would not advise anybody to do that. Look, you want to have a podcast, you want to start your own show. I feel like it's a lot harder now because there's so many of them. There weren't this many when I started mine. So it's not going to be easy. You know, you've got a sea of thousands and thousands of shows, but don't let that discourage you, because if you want to do it, there's nothing stopping you. You don't have to start out all fancy and stuff. You buy a, you know, relatively inexpensive USB microphone. You want to go on camera, you buy a webcam. Figure out what you want the format of your show to be, what the subject matter is going to be passionate about it. Make sure it's something that you actually like talking about. And the most important piece of advice I can give you is be consistent with it. Don't do it once or twice and then, yeah, let a few weeks go by and oh, I'll do it when I feel like it. I'm not really feeling it. You're going to fail if you do that. You will fail. You will fail. Consistency is the key. And if people like what they hear, then they'll tune in. And if they don't, then they won't. Not everybody has the voice for it. I don't just mean literally the voice. I just mean the presence. They sound interesting. There's something about their personality that people can latch onto. Just be yourself. Don't try to be somebody else. Be consistent. And the audience will come. Dr. Dakota Scorpio. Yes, the shirt is real, but let's pretend that it's not. I never heard of that shirt design before. You got to send me a picture of that. Is there a picture of this? Miguel says in the chat, which job do you enjoy more, PR or YouTube? They're both fulfilling in different ways, but, you know, YouTube is, I mean, that's my passion. Not just YouTube, I mean the podcast. When I say the podcast, that envelops everything. It's the audio show, which is always going to be my baby, but it's the audio show, it's YouTube, all the bonus shows I do. The podcast is my passion. I don't have that same passion for anything else that I do, except this. So that should answer your question. It doesn't mean that I hate what I do, It just means that I don't have the same level of passion for that that I do for this. Which is why I dedicate so much time to doing this. And it's been very rewarding for me, but it's not easy. It takes a lot of time, takes a lot of effort. It's not easy, but I don't get that sense of fulfillment from anything else, you know, professionally that I do from all of this. GCC 305, it's the mask that Mr. Brody Lee gave 10, since next week's Rampage is the 2-year anniversary of Mr. Brody Lee's last match ever. I see. Has it really been 2 years? Wow. That's pretty crazy. 2 years since Brody Lee had his last match. Which means we're coming up on the 2-year anniversary of his death in December, right around Christmas. Dethronic, $5 super chat. Everyone talking about who versus Roman might lose to at Mania. No one mentions Big E. I see him back by Mania. Big E is not going to be back by WrestleMania. Big E is not even going to be evaluated for progress on his neck until the 1-year anniversary of his injury. And I don't remember if he got injured right before WrestleMania or after. I think it was before. I would be beyond stunned if Big E was back in the ring by WrestleMania. And frankly, there's no guarantee Big E will ever be back in the ring. Big E may never be back in the ring. Being back in the ring by WrestleMania is impossible for me to even conceive. I hope he can get back in the ring one day, but if he does, it ain't going to be a WrestleMania. And even if he was back in time, it should not be Big E. Big E should not be the one beating Roman Reigns. I can guarantee you it will not be Big E. Thank you to Steve, by the way. Steve did mention, you know, I got a lot of messages today, and I didn't know why at first. I was just being tagged in all these tweets. But apparently today was, I guess they have this every year. I forgot that it was today. It's International Podcast Day. September 30th is International Podcast Day. So I was getting a lot of very nice messages today and being tagged in a lot of tweets as people's favorite podcast. And I appreciate that very much. It's very cool to get all those messages and hear that you know, people find the show important to their daily routine, their weekly routine, that, you know, they enjoy it. They've been listening for so many years, a decade or more in some cases. That's very, very cool. So I wanted to say what I said on Twitter, I'll say it here. Thank you to everybody who was tagging me in those tweets and making me their go-to podcast here for International Podcast Day. That's very cool. Simi Valley, any ideas for the 2 War Games matches at Survivor Series? Yes, they were on. I gave them on the podcast last week. You can go back and check out my pitch for the women and my pitch for the men. But I will tell you that on one side of the women's match, you have Ronda Rousey, and on the other side of the women's match, you have Becky Lynch. Hey, Gato, thank you. Gato Otaku Films found the channel 5 months ago. I'm very happy that you found the channel. I'd be curious, everybody in the chat. I know some have been here longer than others. When did you start listening to the podcast or watching the content here on YouTube? Let's find out in the chat. How many people here have been listening or watching for a while? How many newbies do we have around here? So I know we picked up a lot of new people this year. I know that. Episode 45. Wow, Kevin Dunn's Beaver, episode 45. Bliss Fan has been listening for a decade. That's very cool. 10 years, 2011, 2013, 2015, 1 year. See, it runs the gamut here. Well, the SE Scoops days, I mean, that's the original right there. He's an OG. He's been listening since the SE Scoops days. That's when I first started. Francisco. It's 10 years and never misses a show. Wow. It's amazing. See, Master Splinter, Bernard, they've been listening since 2022. So I said, we have some newbies. who have found the show this year. Jeremiah, yes. TV Tracks, yes. Yeah, I always give a shout out to TV Tracks. I don't know where he is. I lost contact with him a long time ago, but you know, he used to have a YouTube channel that he would post clips from different shows, who would give, you know, permission to post clips on a weekly basis. And my show and Don Tony's show was another one. He started posting some wrestling soup stuff. Greg, good mic work. He started posting his content, but he was posting my stuff from the very beginning. And I can't tell you how many people found the show through TV Tracks, because Tracks at the time had almost 80,000 subs. And this is when I wasn't even focusing on YouTube. It was pretty much just, I had a YouTube channel. I was doing nothing with it, which I regret. I regret letting the channel sit dormant for so long. But I had the audio show, which was big enough, and it just it exposed my show to so many new people. So I always give a shout out to TV Tracks wherever he may be. But everybody gets burned out, I guess, at some point, right? So TV Tracks is enjoying his retirement in Lake Tahoe somewhere. Aussie of Steel just trying to stall to get us to 500 likes. Yeah, where are we? I haven't even checked where we are. EJ Slemp, excluding that awful War Games 2000 match, what is the worst War Games match of all time? It's probably Fall Brawl 96 or 97 with the NWO. Yeah, I think 97. If I'm remembering correctly, the 97 one I think was pretty bad. 92 is the best one I ever saw. But 97 I think is the one I would probably go with. That one is the worst. Dr. Dakota Scorpio keeps... You're funny. You are funny. Funny, funny, funny. Funny don't make money, right? Isn't that the expression? Funny don't equal money. Lovelie says, my first video I saw of you was the one you made a year ago about why Vince must resign from creative. How well that aged. Indeed. Indeed. It did age very well. And I don't think I honestly believe that it would ever happen, that I would ever live to see the day where he would make that choice, even though I think the choice was really made for him. But yes, that was a very illuminating rant. And that was a very happy day when he finally stepped away and paved the way for a new vision here for this company, which is exactly what WWE needed. You know, this SmackDown show last week did 2.5 million viewers. I like to see good television get rewarded with good numbers. SmackDown has definitely been improved from where it was a few months ago. Winter's Paw, not going to lie, the I Quit match, I cried for Shotzi because I thought she was going to be fired. Glad to see her thrive now, future star in the making. Maybe, I mean, I don't know, the last few matches that she's been in that I've seen her in have not been good, but she's had a hell of a year. I know on a personal level, she's had a lot of loss and just personal shit going on that she's been going through. And you never know how that's weighing on a person. But tonight certainly was not one of her better nights. I didn't like that match at all with her and Bayley. And it's not just her. I didn't think the match was any good. I think they're both to blame for that. Don Juan. Hey, Fire Panda, I missed you. Now I'm gone again. Kevin Dunn's Beaver says, call me Joseph Stalin. Cute. Very cute. Dr. Dakota Scorpio says, don't stop believing for 500 likes. I don't know. There's too much of a gap, I think, to make it. Rizzo with the 999. There's our buddy Rizzo. Last super chat, he says, last one, that super chat about Jay being the one who is right takes me back to the Wyatt family when Luke Harper did not trust Randy Orton and the build was perfect, although Vince dropped the ball. Yes, that should have been a triple threat match at WrestleMania. I said that at the time. I still believe that to be true. It should have been Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt, and Luke Harper. But if they didn't have any intention of putting Luke Harper over, then that's probably why Vince McMahon didn't want him in the match. He wanted the belt on Randy Orton. He didn't want all the people in the stadium chanting for Luke Harper. that was the better story. That was actually a very good storyline. They fucked it all up. What a waste. Simi Valley, if you had to guess, do you think MJF will make the jump to WWE, or do you think that this recent new push will make him happy to stay in AEW? The recent new push doesn't matter at all. If his contract is not up for another year, year and a half, a lot can happen in a year. I think we will ultimately see him in WWE. GCC305, Solomonster, will we get a watch-along of Halloween Havoc between Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero since October 26 lands on a Wednesday? Possible, if people want to see it. We could do one for that. Yeah, I think that's possible. I figured we would do one next Wednesday for Hell in a Cell, and then the one after that would be the Montreal Survivor Series main event. But yeah, I guess it is 25 years. It's going to be 25 years for the Rey Mysterio-Eddie Guerrero match at Halloween Havoc. It's such a quick match, though. They're moving around so fast, it'll be like a 15-minute watch-along. Dr. Dakota, who needs Rampage reviews when we can stall Solomonster for likes? Yeah, there was no way I was doing a Rampage. I looked at that card. I said, yeah, we're not doing a Rampage review. Even next week. We'll see. I know next week Rampage is live and they're doing Battle of the Belts live. So that means that I, you know, watch SmackDown from 8 to 10, Rampage from 10 to 11, Battle of the Belts from 11 to 12. And then go live after midnight to review three shows. Less than 24 hours before Extreme Rules. I don't know about that. Are you going to do a 20-year anniversary for the Elimination Chamber? I guess that was 20 years ago next month. You see, I keep thinking of Elimination Chamber as a February thing. But yeah, it was at the Survivor Series in 2002. Ooh, you know what? We may have to do one for that too. Maybe. Maybe we will. We may add that to the list. Well, I just checked, and I see that you guys have once again, you have impressed me here. You have come in with the buzzer beater here at the end. We have 515 likes on tonight's stream, and do you know what that means? Do you know what that means? To count it down like Drew McIntyre when he does the Claymore, where he does the 3, the 2, the 1. It means that we are going to be the booker. How about that? Yeah, Steve's taking notes as well, since I'm going to need his help with the artwork for these watch-alongs. So put that on your list. Put that on your list. We've got Halloween Havoc, 1997, 25 years later, Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero. We've got Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, Survivor Series 97, the Montreal Screwjob, we can just call it. And probably the first Elimination Chamber. So me and Steve will huddle up on that. All right, let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
I don't know, man. You guys are amazing. You snatched victory from the jaws of defeat. I thought we were going to fall short here, but you didn't let me down. I guess that's an early birthday gift from all of you. We get to do Be the Booker, and we will begin. Why don't we start out a little bit differently? We'll start out with the ladies Be the Booker tonight. Maybe it'll bring good luck. Shake things up a little bit. We begin with Ronda Rousey. Rowdy Ronda Rousey, who may well be the new SmackDown Women's Champion after next weekend. Look at her. She looks so happy in this photo. Look how happy she looks. Ronda Rousey one-on-one with Deonna Purrazzo. That's good shit. That's good shit. Ronda and Deonna, I think that'd be a hell of a match. Maybe we should start with the women in the future. Maybe it brings good luck. Let's book match number 2 on tonight's card. We begin with Pat McAfee who has been missed on SmackDown these last few weeks. Corey Graves is fine, but Pat McAfee and Michael Cole make a fun combo on these shows. And we have no Pat. Pat is nowhere to be found. We have him here tonight on Be the Booker. Pat McAfee going to go one-on-one with Hollywood Hulk Hogan. I think that would end up being a hell of a match. All the heat that Hollywood Hogan had back in the day leading the NWO, Pat McAfee, always getting big reactions, no matter who he's in the ring with. McAfee and Hogan, one-on-one. I think that'd end up being a very good match, actually. Now, over on the tag team side, we got to complete the card. Can't have a one-match card, can't have a two-match card. You got to have a three-match card. And we're going to do something a little bit different tonight, my little gift to all of you. We're going to make this a fatal four-way. We're going to book ourselves four teams tonight instead of two. Hey, Buck You, 2021, thank you for the sub. I like that. Buck You. All right, here we go. First fatal four-way that we've ever done here on Be the Booker. We begin with the Fabulous Freebirds. There's Terry Gordy. There's Michael Hayes. There's Mean Gene, but he's not a Freebird. We go from the Freebirds to the Holly Cousins, Hardcore and Crash. So we got the Freebirds. We got the Holly Cousins. We got the Rockers, Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. How about that? The Rockers and the Freebirds. What kind of match would they have had? We got the Rockers. We got the Freebirds. We got the Hollies. And we got Tyson Kidd and David Hart Smith. The Rockers, the New Heart Foundation, right? Is that what they were called? The Holly Cousins. And the Freebirds. That's a good match. It's not a main event. It would not close out the show, but that's a good match. Three for three and Be the Booker tonight. Give yourselves a hand. You guys made that happen. Three for three. Shawn Michaels. A young Shawn Michaels or even a young Marty Jannetty in the ring with Tyson Kidd. Fuck, sign me up, man. Sign me up. You put Terry Bam Bam Gordy in there with them too? Terry Gordy in there with Shawn Michaels? Shit. Who else? Oh, the Hart Dynasty. That's what it was. I thought it was the new Hart Foundation, I thought. That's right. The Hart Dynasty. That's what it was. We have Dr. Dakota Scorpio. Who needs... we did that already. I'm giving him a second read of the same super chat. Boots with the $5. More for the liquor fund. Solid Monster pulled a Bischoff and gave West Coast viewers the results before they air. Just got to the Inoki tribute. Have a good night, Boots. Have yourself a good night. Do I like the Bad Street song? Yeah, it's a good song. Very catchy. Miguel says, I think this is the year you cover a Lucha show. I covered Lucha Underground every week that show aired. Was that not a Lucha show? It had Lucha in the title. You must have missed the five seasons or four, whatever it was, four seasons of the show that I covered. I've covered plenty of Lucha on my show. Thank you guys for hanging out with me here on this Friday night. Again, I hope that anybody who may have been in the path of the hurricane is doing okay. I know some people still don't have power, which is very scary. But I think all the usual suspects here in the chat every week are all accounted for. So hopefully that will stay that way. I will have episode 776 of the podcast this Sunday. A lot to get into, a lot to talk about. We'll talk about Antonio Inoki. We'll talk about all the other news of the week. I will have my Extreme Rules predictions as well. Back with you live on Monday night after Raw for the go-home show. The first of two go-home shows next week. And, of course, Dynamite next Wednesday. You're getting two shows next Wednesday. Not only are you going to have the Dynamite stream that night, but you will also have the Hell in a Cell watch-along that afternoon. Next Friday, back with you for SmackDown and possibly all of the AEW shows as well. So we have a full week leading into Extreme Rules. Be live on YouTube next Saturday night after the pay-per-view. So again, the work never ends. I hope that you will spend your first week of October with me. It is always my favorite month. Steve has the Halloween version of the logo ready for all of the artwork for the entire month of October. We're going to do it up for Halloween. And that is it for the month of September. So thank you. Be well. Stay safe. Have a good night. And I will see you back here on Monday night for the Raw review. Until then, take care, guys.